Welcome to Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators with Jordan Donnell. This is a safe place to learn about women's health and sexual wellness. I'm your host, Jordan Donnell, physician assistant, women's sexual health educator, and intimacy coach. On this week's episode, we are talking about cryopreservation. What is it? Who may think about it? And a little bit about my journey with cryopreservation. This is our fifth episode in our series on infertility. Are you wanting to improve your intimacy and would like some wonderful ideas to help you? I have created the 30-day intimacy challenge. To get my free 30-day intimacy challenge, all you gotta do is leave a review for the Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators podcast. Once you do that on iTunes, take a screenshot, share it over on Instagram, and tag me, Jordan Donnell, in it. That will get you your free copy of my 30 Days of Intimacy Challenge. It is super fun, it is super juicy, and can't wait for you to try these. You can do it in whatever order you'd like, whether you'd like to do all 30 of them or pick and choose, it's up to you. Go write your review and get your 30 Days of Intimacy Challenge started right away. I'm so excited to talk to you guys about cryopreservation. This is one of my topics that's really near and dear to my heart. Last year, I actually underwent cryopreservation of my eggs. I'm sure you're probably like, okay, what in the world is cryopreservation? So let me give you a little bit of the background first. Cryopreservation is preservation of the eggs or freezing of the eggs. This process is very similar to IVF. It's the same type of medication. It's the same retrieval process. However, the eggs are not fertilized. They're left as gametes or eggs, oocytes is the medical term, and frozen at that stage. At a later point in life, they can be thawed and used via the IVF process and inseminated with sperm to create a potential embryo. Cryopreservation is really, really great for somebody who is not sure if they want kids right now, not sure kind of how that timeline looks. Maybe they want kids, maybe they don't want kids. Maybe they don't have a partner right now, but kids is something that they want in the future. It's a really great option to have available. I know that a lot of women are more career focused right now and not necessarily thinking about motherhood or thinking about starting a family, or maybe they want to, but they don't have a partner and don't want to do it on their own. So this is a really, really great option to help freeze your fertility at the age that it is right now, and then you can use that at a later point in life. As we know, fertility declines starting at the age of 30 and then dramatically declines after the age of 35. The odds of achieving pregnancy without fertility treatment as we age decreases. But if you cryopreserve, you have that available to you a little bit longer. You can transfer an embryo up to the age of about 50, 55, depending on the fertility clinic. That preserves that fertility much longer for you. I froze my eggs last summer, and it's something that I had been wanting to do for a really long time. For me, I am a single woman. I was about to turn 30, and I'm like, okay, let me just go ahead and freeze my eggs. I'm not dating anybody. I don't know really if I want kids in my future, but let me just go ahead and have a backup plan. I wanted to take that pressure off of dating that, you know, if I wanted to have a family, we needed to rush into dating right away so that I can start a family because, you know, fertility declines. So I wanted to take that off the table. This process was really intense and it was very different than what I had kind of anticipated. I was really looking forward to it. I had got myself all psyched up and then COVID hit. And okay, fine, like, you know, it's not the end of the world, we'll reschedule. It is what it is, you can't control it. But this gave me an opportunity to look back and think like, do I really want to do this? Am I sure I want to do this? I am terrified of needles, like absolutely terrified. So the thought of giving myself an injection or more than one injection for a handful of days was just a little terrifying. When I had to delay my egg freezing for a couple of months during that time frame, I really tried to think of every possible option to back out. And I finally was just like, no, you're gonna do it. Like, man up and do it. I'm gonna tell you a little bit about what that process was like for me so that you can have a better understanding of what that process would be like if that was something that you might be interested in. My journey was a little bit different because I froze my eggs at the fertility clinic that I used to work at. When you first make your consult or your initial appointment, you're going to kind of go in and see your provider and talk to them about, you know, what your goals are, what you're thinking, all of that. For me, they knew me really well. They already knew where my mind was. They already knew what I wanted to do. So we just jumped on to the let's get labs and see what your fertility looks like. My labs came back looking great, totally normal, normal for my age, nothing alarming, should be just fine. They also did some additional tests because I did choose to donate half of my eggs. The additional tests that they ran for a donor were some genetic tests for three common disorders. The second was a panel for STIs, so HIV, gonorrhea, chlamydia, hepatitis C. That allows my oocytes to be stored without any issues as well. So when you're storing them, they need to have that additional screening done too. Once the screening was done and my labs all were fine, then we scheduled for an ultrasound to take a look at my ovaries, kind of see, you know, what is our antral follicle count? So like kind of what are we working with? Looked good, no cysts, nothing abnormal, all was great. Most people are going to have that appointment and then get scheduled for their baseline and start the actual process of cryopreservation. And then you get scheduled for the stimulation process. There are a ton of appointments. This process, you really have to have a job or a schedule that's super flexible because you're going to have to go into the office basically every other day to be evaluated and make sure that things are moving appropriately, moving safely. It's a time commitment. It's not something that's really that easy if you think about it. My next appointment was a baseline appointment, and this was before I started any medication. This is just an ultrasound and some labs to make sure that my body hasn't ovulated, make sure that everything is in line, make sure that my ovaries look good, no cysts. This is done a couple days before you start your injectable medication. During this time, I was on estrogen. So through the process, they have to sync your cycle, at least the way this clinic does their stims. They had to sync my cycle with their plan. And so I had stopped my birth control and started estrogen. And that estrogen is kind of priming all of my follicles, getting them all ready to grow, but prevents me from overriding it and ovulating. At least that's the goal. However, your body does weird things, and it is absolutely possible that you come to that baseline appointment and your body didn't cooperate and you ovulated. It happens. So there's two medications that I started injecting day one. It was the Menopur and the Gonal F. And this is to get that follicle growth going, kind of that gas pedal, get everything working and on a roll, really. And so I did that for a couple of days. And let me tell you about the first injection. So because I'm terrified of needles, I had to kind of set the mood and get everything all right. I would turn on some soft music, light a candle, like create this environment that was super relaxing for me because the injection was just emotionally draining for me. I have a really good friend who I should have asked him to come give me the injections because it would have been so much easier for me, but the stubborn person that I am, I'm like, oh, I got this. Like, I don't need anybody's help. I can totally do it. So I did it myself, And after my first shots, my first set of shots, I was so drained that I couldn't literally do anything else. I had to go like watch a movie and fall asleep. It was a lot. But, you know, it was fine. It got better. So do some more injections, then come up to my first blood draw appointment. The lady at the lab, she was so great. She knew that like I am terrified of needles. She never had any issues getting blood from me. I actually really love to have conversations while I'm getting my blood drawn so that it distracts me, so that I don't pay attention to what's going on, so that I can handle it. Basically, I've learned how to cope with all of my little quirks by finding other ways to deal with it. So whatever works, right? You do what you got to do. Blood draw looks great. My estrogen is rising as expected. All is good. A couple days later, go in for an appointment. This time it's blood draw and ultrasound. So at this appointment, they do an ultrasound and they're like, there's 30, I think they said like 34-ish eggs. I'm like, oh my goodness. Having worked in fertility, I know that that many eggs is, you know, not necessarily ideal either. The goal is like 15 to 20. Like a normal, healthy woman, a lot of times, is going to get about 15 to 20 eggs. When you get over 30, that is a pretty high producer, I guess you could call it. Your risk of hyperstim is increased when you have that many eggs because follicles with theoretically eggs in each of them, because you're producing that much more estrogen. Kind of was mentally prepared for that to happen just because of what I know. The doctor that I had been working with, he had kind of prepped me for expecting that when my first appointment started showing pretty high numbers of eggs. I don't know if everybody's prepped for that. I just, since I've been in the fertility world and I'm really familiar, it's a little bit different for me. Next day I go in and get checked again, and I think we were sitting at like 37, and I'm like, oh my goodness, this is crazy. Like, this is just insane, but okay, here we go. Like, we're coming in hot. When I do anything, I do it big, right? A couple days later, going for my next appointment, all is looking good, everything's growing, but my estrogen is like really high. I think the last time we checked my estrogen, it was over 4,000. That's not normal. Normal estrogen in a woman is like 500 to 1,000. When you do fertility treatment, it is going to be elevated, but 4,000 is like, whew, really elevated. That meant that I needed to start an additional medication to block the hormone shift after the procedure. Through this process, it was like 8 to 10 days of injections, and you start with your two injectables, then you add a third injectable that prevents you from ovulating once your follicles get to be a specific size, and then at the end, you have a fourth injectable that triggers for ovulation. I remember I got the call, I was ready to trigger for ovulation and get scheduled for my procedure, and I was so lucky to have my mom here with me that whole weekend because she cared for me so much. And there were so many things that I just didn't prepare for mentally. Having worked in fertility, I had a solid idea of what was happening, but I never really understood what these women were going through until going through it myself. And let me tell you, my emotions through this process were all over the place. I didn't cry as much as I expected, but I was just kind of very short and crabby. One of my main outlets in life is exercise. I love to work out, but with this process, your ovaries get really big and you can't work out because you A, don't want to limit blood flow to your ovaries, but B, you don't want them to twist on themselves and end up in a surgical emergency, which can happen, an ovarian torsion. I had to take it easy. So it doesn't help that I'm pumped up with estrogen and I can't do my outlet. And then to top it off, I was walking, I was dog sitting at the time. So I was walking and there got to be a point where my ovaries were so big that I couldn't walk. It was just uncomfortable for me. I would say most women don't really experience that, but because of how many follicles I had, my experience was definitely different than the normal individual. So day of procedure, I am super excited. I'm ready to get this over with. I'm ready. When I got there, because of COVID, things were really weird. So you had to like sit in your car and wait until they were ready for you. Then they would call you and then you go in and then basically there you go. I go in and they get my weight, make sure I didn't have anything to eat that day. Everything looks good. They take you back to the pre-procedure room and they didn't give me any time to panic. It was amazing. Before I know it, they got an IV in me and they're taking me back to the procedure room. And I remember laying on the table, you're in your stirrups. And at this point, you've had so many transvaginal ultrasounds that you're kind of like, whatever, nobody cares. During the procedure, what they do is just like the IVF process that we talked about last week, that egg retrieval process. They use a transvaginal ultrasound and then a needle to suck the fluid out of the follicles. And theoretically, each follicle contains an egg. However, that is not always the case. And that's exactly what happened in my case. We had a handful of follicles, but only got 27 eggs. And of those 27 eggs, only 21 of them were mature. That's something about the process that a lot of people don't understand, is there is this normal attrition. I kind of expected that. I expected a little bit more than 21, but you know, hey, I'll take it. Just because you have a specific number doesn't mean, you know, 21 eggs does not mean that that's 21 embryos. Now, if you think about it, not all of them are going to fertilize. Not all of them are going to continue to grow. And that's what the whole IVF process actually looks at, is taking away all those factors so that you're transferring something that is suitable potentially for life, and kind of through natural selection weeded out the rest. Now, in my case, we just froze the eggs. And the ones that I donated went to a donation bank, and the ones that I have for myself got flown to Minnesota and are sitting in a freezer out there. I remember coming out of the procedure and I told the doctor, I was just like, I started crying, and I don't know why I had started crying, but I started crying because I think I was just overwhelmed with the whole situation. And I had told him, I just hope that somebody gets a baby from my eggs, from the ones that I had donated. I like just want that so much for somebody else. So that process all right there is the cryopreservation and donation in a nutshell for me. I probably left out some details. I had actually recorded this episode about 6 months ago when I had recorded it with Rachel Main. I ended up afterwards getting off the call with her and doing my own. And I listened to it and I loved it, but decided I didn't love it that much. So I re-recorded it and I left a handful of things out, but process was great. Highly, highly encourage it for any woman who is thinking about potentially wanting children later on in life and not sure where, like what their future holds. And if they're very like career focused and not thinking about kids right now, strongly, strongly encourage cryopreservation. Cryopreservation is also really great for somebody who is going through cancer treatment, and being able to collect their eggs and freeze them prior to that, because after cancer treatment, you may not be able to get pregnant with your eggs depending on what your treatment was like and where. But highly recommend looking into it, especially if you're a woman who's approaching 30 or over 30, who potentially wants to have kids and isn't sure kind of what the future holds for them. Now I want to tell you guys kind of the juicy aftermath of all of this. I forgot to mention that after the procedure, that was actually the worst part for me. Like, leading up to the procedure, the injections and everything were just fine. My body wasn't comfortable, but it was okay. But because my estrogen was so high, I actually did have some of those, that hyperstim going on. So they had started me on another medication to block all of that. And I bloated so much through this process that we don't talk about how you feel about your body during this process. Like, I did not feel good at all about my body. I felt fluffy. That's the easiest way to put it. And you can't move, like you can't exercise. So it was really, really emotionally hard dealing with that. But after the procedure, those follicles that get removed fill up with fluid. And so your ovaries become large again. And the discomfort that I had after the procedure was significantly worse than anything I had before. And I had to wait a whole couple of weeks before I could work out again until my next period started to allow time for my ovaries to recover. So my experience is definitely different than most other women's. What I learned through this process is something really interesting. And this is kind of like the jaw dropper of the whole thing. So I had donated half of my eggs. Those eggs, I don't know if all of them are used. I don't know all the details because of the protection of the intended parents, but my eggs that were used ended up actually being very poor quality. And so my backup plan turns out probably isn't a solid backup plan. It doesn't mean that my eggs won't work, but it could mean that the ones that got donated were all the bad ones, and the ones that I have are the good ones. Who knows? What we found was that my eggs were, everything looked great. The whole process looked great. But when they went to fertilize them, some of them didn't fertilize. Some of them didn't come out of the thaw, which is really, really weird for this particular practice because their lab is really good. I worked there. I know how good their lab is, and I 100 million percent trust them. So like, it has nothing to do with technical error at all. And when I worked there, like maybe once or twice did eggs not thaw. For me to have multiple eggs not thaw appropriately was kind of a shocker. And then the ones that were fertilized had some abnormalities that are consistent with egg abnormalities. And then the ones, they just did all kinds of weird things. And as far as I know at this point, did not result in pregnancy. So, which is really too bad. I feel really bad, but I learned that the reason why all of this likely happened is because the environment that I live in has ultimately been poisoning me. You don't think about what you put into your body every day. You don't think about the water, like where's the water come from? What's it processed with? You don't think about the plastic in your cups or the plastic in your containers, your Tupperware containers, things like that. We just don't think about it. Or the aluminum in your deodorant. I mean, you name it. There are so many things, so many environmental factors that are in affecting your body that we don't realize and we don't know about. And is this reversible for me? Maybe. Maybe not. We don't really know. And the health department is involved, the EPA is involved, it's a whole ordeal, but definitely changed my thought process on what I'm putting into my body and made me way more aware of all of that. And unfortunately, like, you can only control so much in your life. Like, you can't control everything. And so it is what it is. It's crazy though. Like, I've had a lot of time to process this and kind of accepted that children may or may not be in my future, and I'm okay with that. Like, I'm very happy with my lifestyle the way that it is, and I'm okay with maybe not having kids. If I decide I want them, great. If I decide to donate the rest of my eggs, great. I don't know. Time will only tell. But I still strongly encourage freezing your eggs as a potential backup plan, because you just don't know. And you would rather do it now than 5-10 years from now look back and be like, I really wish I would have done that. The process is expensive. It's not cheap. The medication is expensive. But if you are somebody who just doesn't know, I so encourage it. So I hope you enjoyed learning a little bit more about cryopreservation and my story with cryopreservation. And I hope that maybe I inspired you to think about it a little bit more and schedule your appointment with your reproductive endocrinologist. Thanks so much for joining me today. Next week's episode, we have some fabulous ladies joining us to share their story of their infertility treatment. This podcast is sponsored by Pure Romance by Jordan Jones, offering top bath and beauty products and relationship enhancement items. Check out the link in the bio to start shopping today. By shopping with Pure Romance by Jordan Jones, you are supporting this podcast. Thank you for joining today and continuing to bring awareness to women's health. If you love the show, please subscribe so you never miss another episode and leave a review for others to see. If you want to see me on the daily, you can check out my bio for links to all my pages. Be sure to share this episode with your girlfriends. Thanks again and see you next episode.